morning and welcome. This is Mike Ferris on the Republic Broadcasting Network, and it's Tuesday, April 3rd, 2012. And today we've got a guest coming on, Mr. Harold Covington, who is an author, wrote a number of books, and we're going to get Harold's take on the Trayvon Martin situation, what's going on there. If any of you watch the mainstream media, you've heard all the talking head on that side of the equation. You know, you've got the typical race baiters, the Al Sharptons, the Jesse Jacksons, all those guys who make a living out of trying to extort money and squeeze the establishment out of issues. And so today we're going to get a contrarian view, the other side of the coin, as to what Mr. Covington thinks about this. And so anyway, Harold will be joining us shortly. But meanwhile, what else do we have to talk about here today in the time between now and the first break? One of the articles that I came up with yesterday I didn't get a chance to address was, it was a question, and it was written as, will U.S. troops turn their guns on U.S. citizens if they declare martial law? And the fact that we even have to ask that kind of question is a sad state of affairs for me. And so many of you have heard me say, I will never advocate violence against the U.S. government. But whenever our government even considers advocating violence against U.S. citizens en masse, that's a sad day. You know, what is this country coming to? Have we really lost our footing as a nation? Have we lost it? I mean, what happened to our responsible government? Now, we know we've got issues in this current government. I'm not just talking about the president, but I'm talking about our Congress. And I'm talking about the institutions that make us a nation. And I'm talking about our banking institutions. I'm talking about our corporations. I'm talking about all of these things that give the structure, you know, the financial and economic structure to a country, to a nation. And what's going on in this world of ours that we even have to ask the question, will U.S. troops turn their weapons on U.S. citizens if they declare martial law? Well, first of all, why would they have to declare martial law? Most Americans that I know, 99.99%, are good law-abiding people. They drive the speed limit. They pay their taxes. They don't go beat people up. They don't go robbing liquor stores. They don't go doing any of that kind of nonsense. They're not terrorists. So why would our government even consider these things? It amazes me. And there, you know, I see influences, outside influences, trying to systematically destroy this country. And, you know, that troubles me. That troubles me. And once again, I have to look at our government. I have to look at the people within our government, because without people, there's just meaningless. It's just an empty office. You know, there's nobody there. I have to look at our government employees. Those of you who have taken the oath and sworn to uphold the Constitution, uphold your oath. Do it. Don't equivocate. Uphold the oath that you took when you were sworn into that office. That's not too much to ask. It really isn't. It's really the bare minimum to ask out of people. And then do a good job once you're in there. You know, don't, you know, take it like it's a post office job or something. All right, well, there's our first break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Thanks for listening. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on the Public Broadcasting Network, and it's Tuesday, April 3rd, 2012. Let's go back to the earlier subject I brought up about our own government and, you know, questioning, you know, our enlisted and military personnel whether they would actually turn their weapons on American citizens. And I remember this TV show when I was a kid called Andy of Mayberry. And you had Andy, and you had Barney Fife. And, you know, Barney carried his gun, but he had one bullet he carried in his pocket. That was kind of the extreme situation. We didn't have the sort of strife that we have right now in our society. And I have to ask, what went wrong? Where did we go wrong? And I look back, and, you know, the theme of today's show was going to be about this Trayvon Martin situation. And I, you know, I've done a little homework on this over the last several days, weeks since it happened. And the Trayvon thing happened in February. It's now April. So the mainstream media and, how do I call this, the race industry, because because it is. It's an industry. Has been beating the drum on this now for, what, 5-6 weeks about this guy got killed? Nobody wants to see a young man shot down dead. No one does. The thing that really jumps off the page at me and the research and the homework I've done by going back prior to 1965, 1963, and looking at the efforts to integrate the United States, you know, because we had segregation back then. We've all been integrated since then to where there is no basis to discriminate via race, via religion, via a number of other parameters out there to where people can mix freely. And the thing that the segregationists were afraid of, they seem to have all come true. Segregationists were afraid that black men would be raping black women, or white women. And, you know, you look at the FBI statistics, there's a website you can bring up called The Color of Crime, and it'll tell you year by year what the statistics are. And it turns out that in 2009, which is the most current year for these statistics, and these are FBI, I didn't make this up, FBI statistics, it's over 38,000 black men raped white women. And those are just the reported ones. And a surprising statistic that goes with this is how many white men raped black women. And that was zero. Zero. 38,000 black men raped white women, but no white men raped black women. That jumps off the page at me, and I take that as a very large surprise. Okay, we've got Harold. He's on the line. He's ready. Good morning, Harold. How are you, sir? Anyway, I really recommend that all of our listeners who have an interest in this subject go to this website. It's called, just type it on your Google search bar, The Color of Crime, and it'll bring up some rather amazing statistics. And you look at the crime that's committed in the country, the black-on-white crime, and that's really what the segregationists were afraid of, is that once integration took place and the races couldn't be separated, that there would be this tremendous crime wave against white citizens. And if you believe what the FBI statistics that are quoted say, that's exactly what happened. And so it really calls into question, have the policies, the experiment of the last 50 years with this great civil rights movement, has this been the right thing for the country? Do we need to readdress these issues? Do we need to look at these things again, take a second look? You know, I don't know. I don't have these answers. I'm not advocating any position one way or the other. I'm just saying, do we need to look at these facts and maybe say, you know, maybe this isn't the right thing to do. Maybe it is. I don't know. All I do know is that according to this website and the FBI statistics, the crime wave against white Americans by black Americans has been tremendous. And that in itself needs examination. And in this country, no one is allowed to even discuss these issues unless you're branded a racist and a bigot. We're not even allowed to talk about it. This whole political correctness thing that suppresses this type of information is, in my opinion, offensive. I mean, we have to start goring somebody's ox, and we have to start looking, you know, slaughtering some of these sacred cows, because the way our country is being, I don't like it. You know, I want our country to be a good, law-abiding, upstanding place. I mean, when I was a kid, we used to go outside and play. We didn't have any fear of strangers. We didn't have any fear of violence. We lived a relatively innocent life back then, and, you know, I want that to be available to our children and grandchildren as we go forward. I don't want to have this siege, this bunker mentality that there's somebody out to get you all the time. And it goes true for everybody. Every American citizen has the same right to this, that we all should be able to live in really a crime-free, drug-free environment where there isn't the threat of violence against us or our person or our wives or our kids. Like I said, hopefully Harold will be joining us here shortly again, and we'll be there. Are you back?
Yeah. Huh? We were going to talk about the Trayvon Martin thing.
Yeah, we were, and I'm just telling the folks, giving them a little update here, that everything that the segregationists stated, that the reason they didn't appreciate integration, has come to pass, that the black-on-white crime rate is through the roof. And I went to the website Color of Crime, and statistics that come out of The Color of Crime are just horrendous. And I gave the quote that in 2009 there were over 38,000 black-on-white rape of women, and in the number of white-on-black rapes was zero. And these type of things jump off the page at me. And it really confirms what the segregationists were afraid of. And
absolutely.
And the American people are afraid of black people. And it's not so much racial hatred, but fear.
Well, they have every reason to be. Another good site, by the way, is newnation.org. They assemble stories of black crime, illegal immigrant crime, gross gay stories, etc., from all over the country. Yes, I think that history, when if any history is ever written of this era, if anyone ever survives to write it, the people who write about this era of ours will be astonished at what we put up with. And one of the great questions for future historians and scholars will be, why? Why didn't the white man fight during this time when all of this stuff was happening? And they're just going to scratch their heads.
Harold, let me jump in and give you an answer to that. The white man doesn't fight because back was in 1957, 1959 in Arkansas when the government sent the National Guard down there to say, not no, but hell no, and under armed force, military force, they pointed guns at the people and said, you're going to integrate these schools or else.
That is what I have always said. The time for resistance came in 1958 in Little Rock. At that point in time, my personal view has always been that the South should have risen again. We should have redeclared the Confederate States of America and gone in for, you know, Civil War Round 2, because that was just unconscionable. At that point, the social contract, which had been more or less stable in the South since 1877 when we ran the last of the carpetbaggers out, was violated by the federal government. But there were a lot of turning points, Brown versus Board of Education and so forth and so on. But you're right. All of this stuff was predicted by so-called right-wingers years ago. I first came into the movement in 72 and, or 768, if you want to count my youthful participation in the Wallace for President movement. And people have been saying ever since I can remember that all this bad, horrible stuff is going to happen if we don't do something. And every year we don't do something, and every year it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. If you told me even before 9/11, that an American president would appropriate unto himself the right to execute and to imprison American citizens without trial, I don't think even before 9/11 I would have believed that.
Well, Harold, here's our break up here, so Okay. Folks hang with us. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Okay.
Good morning. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on the Public Broadcasting Network. And today is April 3rd, 2012. We're on with author and guest Harold Covington. And Harold is pretty famous for writing a series of books called The North Quintet. I've had him on before to discuss the content of the books. But his purpose today here is to discuss the Trayvon Martin issue and his perspective on it. Because so far, all we've heard about is Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and that side of the equation. And there's more than one viewpoint on this thing. So I just want our listeners to realize that there's more than one point of view and we don't have to accept what the mainstream media tells us. So Harold, welcome back.
Okay, glad to be here.
So what's your take on this?
Well, first off, the so-called Trayvon Martin incident is essentially about Obama's re-election. From now until next November, just about everything that happens in this country is going to be about Obama in one way or another. I believe that liberal media has taken an incident which is actually fairly common. I think it's uncommon only in the sense that the black criminal actually got injured or shot. But they've taken this incident and they've turned it into an excuse to whip up a racial hysteria to stir up Obama's base, i.e. the blacks, who constitute a very large part of Obama's base. And they're creating this whole thing about, oh, we live in a terrible, evil, wicked, racist country, and now we must re-elect this noble black man to prove we're not racist. I think that's another part of it, not only to stir up the blacks, but to frighten the whites into running to the polls and voting for Obama again for fear that they will be called racist. That is the one thing that whites have been conditioned from birth to believe, is that they must never, ever be called racist. To be a racist is the worst thing in the world. You can be a homosexual, you can be a drug dealer, you can be...
Well, Harold, let me ask a question here, you know, because I don't even know what the term racist means anymore. It's been so abused and misused so many times.
Well, I
don't know what it means. I mean, what is a racist?
Well, one of our old leaders, Pastor Robert Miles, was once asked that question, and Bob said, a racist is someone who knows who he is. I think that's the best definition I've ever heard of it. It doesn't involve hatred. It doesn't involve bigotry or wanting to string niggers up to trees or anything like that.
Okay, now I have a favor to ask.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm sorry. The word slipped out.
The proper term is Negro. That's an acceptable term. I just have to prompt you on it. That's all. Okay.
Well, how about Munkoid? Anyway, no.
No, come on.
Mike,
with me here.
I'll tell you, this is an interesting thing. You'll note that even on a program allegedly devoted to free speech, we have to watch ourselves. White people always have to watch ourselves. We have to look over our shoulder to see who's listening. It's an Orwellian form of thought control. I don't know if you ever read 1984, but I think the most interesting part of the book is the glossary where it talks about newspeak. And basically what Orwell says is that by controlling language, you can control thought. That, I think, in essence, is why certain words have now become absolutely, totally forbidden, because the liberal media and the people who control us want white people so afraid to say certain words that we will actually self-censor ourselves and not even think those words. Anyway, getting back to your question, Bob said a racist is someone who knows who he is, so it's not a matter of hatred, not even so much a matter of love for our own people. Being a racist is a matter of identity, of self-awareness, of knowing who we are as a people, of knowing who we are as descendants of a bloodline, as part of a heritage, as part of a nation, whatever.
That's really confusing, because the left will call anyone a racist just if you merely disagree with the policy. Like, I don't agree with affirmative action. I think affirmative action is, quote-unquote, a racist, discriminatory policy against those who are the best and brightest. But they use affirmative action to make room for a segment of the population, a protected segment, that really can't perform or doesn't perform for some reason academically. So they create space for them. And I look at the University of California system, particularly at Berkeley, where you have very high-performing Asians who are locked out of the system. And there's our next break, right when I was making a point. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Good morning and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, and it's Tuesday, April 3rd, 2012. We're on with author and today's social commentator, Harold Covington. So, Harold, welcome back.
Glad to be
here. Before our break, the comment I was making is that affirmative action, how it's working against other minorities, because University of California, Berkeley campus in particular, they have a lot of Asians in that area of the country who want to go to school at University of California in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having to turn Asians away, high-performing, very intelligent Asians that are being turned away to make room in these affirmative action programs for blacks. And so
blacks and Mexicans, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would imagine as well. I don't have the statistics in front of me. I remember reading the article about it, but the Asians were a little twisted about this. They were a little angry about it.
I can imagine.
Because they're a minority as well. And, why is one minority getting priority over another minority?
I always love it when the minorities fall out and they start quarreling over the pie and they can't play nice. Mike, are you familiar with the book, The Peter Principle? It was published about 30, 40 years ago. Anyway,
Yes, I am.
Basically, it talks about how in a hierarchy, every employee rises to his own level of incompetence. He can do a job. He keeps getting promoted. Finally, he gets promoted into a job that he's incompetent at, and there he stays, and which is, according to Dr. Peter, who wrote the book, this is why things don't work. Well, the thing about affirmative action is that under an affirmative action system where promotion in a hierarchy or things like college admissions are based on things that have nothing whatsoever to do with merit or competence, people not only reach their level of incompetence, but they are dragged several levels above it. And so what we have is a society not just being run by people who have reached their level of incompetence, but they've reached a level of super incompetence. And this is one of the many reasons why American society is now on the point of collapse, is because we have people running everything from government departments to universities, scientific programs, whatever you want to get into, that simply do not know what they are doing, cannot know what they are doing. A good example will be any black-run school district, like, say, in Detroit or Atlanta, but I think the best example of all is Barack Hussein Obama. Contrary to the liberal propaganda, I just don't think he's that bright.
Let me interject something here, and this is where I think affirmative action hurts the people who it's intended to benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say I'm a black man, and I'm smart. I'm really smart, and I'm smart enough to get into medical school. And not only am I smart enough to get into medical school, I'm smart enough to graduate, and I'm good enough with my hands that I can become, let's say, a thoracic surgeon or a neurosurgeon. And I go out there into the workplace to be employed, and no one wants to use me because they fear I'm an affirmative action hire.
Mm-hmm.
Because affirmative action, I believe, taints those who it's intended to benefit, because it makes people second guess. Well, who do you want to operate on to perform your heart surgery? Do you want the white guy or the Asian guy or the black guy? Well, with the black guy, there's a chance you may be hiring a guy who got there through affirmative action, which implies he wasn't good enough to get there on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that undermines the whole purpose of what it's intended to do.
Well, the problem, Mike, there is that that's common sense, and common sense doesn't have anything to do with political and social discourse in America today. Common sense is lethal to the American way of life currently. We no longer base our decisions and our way of life on common sense or logic or facts. Everything in America has become ideological, the whole blue state, red state thing. And I swear, sometimes I think that as a nation we have become suicidal. It's like we're trying to disembowel ourselves with some of the stupid things we do.
Carol, I don't think it's the American people who are doing this. I think this is a planned and controlled destruction of the United States. We're going afield here. I really want to talk about Trayvon.
Sure. Yeah.
In that situation. And so, give us your take on what happened here. Now, there was new photographs released today showing the damage to Zimmerman's face.
Mm.
And the one thing that jumps off the page at me is, most cases, this guy Zimmerman, number one, he's not white. He's been represented in the mainstream as white. He's a Jewish mestizo. You look at this guy. He's not a white guy.
Is that confirmed? Is he for sure Jewish? I mean, the name is a giveaway, but I didn't know that they've actually now come out and admitted that he's Jewish.
Well, that's what I'm hearing on the Internet, and so I don't know the guy. I'm just taking this at face value. So with that qualifier, this is the first break between blacks and Jews in maybe 50 years on issue of a substance here.
Well, there was the Louis Farrakhan issue, but yeah, I kind of figured when I heard that name that he might actually be descended from Cuban Jews. I don't know if you're aware of it, but in 1959, when Castro took over Cuba, almost the entire Jewish community, who had done very well under Batista, fled to Florida. And so a lot of the first wave, anyway, of Cuban refugees into this country were actually Jews. But you asked what happened. I think anyone who lives in America can tell you what happened. The guy's cruising around his neighborhood trying to guard against burglars and drug dealers and basically blacks. We say crime, but we know we mean blacks. And he sees this large black dude, if you want to say that, walking slow and looking around. And this, like I say, anyone who lives in America can tell you he's looking for a car to break into. or a car to steal or a house to break into, looking to rip off Whitey. And so he calls the cops, as he should. They say, quote, don't confront him, because I'm sure the police just hate dealing with incidents like this where, you know, people resist. But for whatever reason he did, he got out of his car. Could be that Trayvon was about to break into somebody's car, about to do something, and this huge 6'3" football player attacks this little guy, and he's got him down on the ground, and he's beating the living crap out of him on the ground, and Zimmerman manages to get to his gun and plug him. And that, of course, is what guns are for. They're for self-defense. This little incident gets played out 100 times in one way or the other every day all across America. But again, like I say, because it's all about Obama these days, the media latches on to this thing, and the race hustlers, Al Sharpe, Jesse Jackson, get involved, and all of a sudden, somehow or other, this whole thing is going to be twisted into the thing about, well, we've got to reelect Obama to stop all this hideous, horrible racism that killed poor Trayvon. That's what
let me make a point here. I don't see America as a racist country anymore. I think the fact that we elected Obama, you know, that he got a majority of the votes, kind of refute that entire argument about
racism. Oh, it's a racist country. It's just that white people aren't the racists anymore.
Ah, okay. So you think that the race hustlers are. And by the way, I'd like to extend an invitation to anyone from Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson. They want to come on the show. They're invited. A representative from the NAACP is invited. I'd even like to have Brother Farrakhan on. If anybody out there is listening has a link to him, I'd invite them on to discuss this same issue. I mean, we're not going to make the situation better in this country until we can have open dialogue. You get on real concisely is the fact that we're not even allowed to talk about this stuff in an open and honest manner. And like I said, I keep going back to those statistics of the color of crime and what the segregation has predicted has come to pass. And it's just, so I shake my head and say, how do we adjust this? How do we make a mid-course correction to not turn back the hands of time, but to come to a fair and equitable situation that is fair to all people in this country? How do we do it?
Well, I think you know my solution. I've written about it in my novels. I don't think that the country, in the traditional sense, America as we know it, is recoverable. There is going to be a breakup similar to what happened in the Soviet Union, and I think really we need to shift our concern to making sure that the white man gets a piece of the pie when the pie is divided up, as it will be. The poet W.B. Yeats wrote that things fall apart, the center cannot hold. That is what is going to happen here. It's what we're seeing happening effectively right now under Obama. I used to be very skeptical about all these old right-wingers who said, well, one day the balloon's going to go up. Well, since Obama came in, I have seen for the first time in 40 years some signs that the balloon actually might go up.
Well, here's what I see. I see with the economic downturn that whites no longer have the ability to flee. White flight is a thing of the past.
Mm-hmm.
We have people who own houses who are stuck in that house and stuck in that neighborhood. And they don't have the ability to flee. So now they can't self-segregate. They can't flee to the suburbs because the house they have is the house they have. They're not going to sell it. The real estate market's dead. So as crime comes in, when blacks come in, and I read an interesting quote the other day that diversity is that time from when the first black family moves into a neighborhood until the last white family moves out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those days are done because, you know, white families can't move anymore. They can't separate themselves voluntarily. They have to go along and get along. Mm-hmm. And white people are afraid because of how blacks conduct themselves on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a solution to this. I'm
that's
inquiring.
The whole reason behind these gated communities. In a way, we're going back to the Middle Ages when, I don't know if you've ever been to Europe, but you'll see on every hill or every rise there's an old castle built where they fortified themselves against outsiders, barbarians, or whatever, and America is becoming the same way. White people are having to fortify themselves. They're having to fortify their communities against the crawling chaos outside the barbed wire and outside the walls, and that crawling chaos is black and brown, and we're going to be seeing more and more of this as the decades go on. What remains of the white population, the technical and managerial elite that actually does keep the country running insofar as it will run, is going to have to barricade itself for simple physical safety against the rest of the country.
Well, you know, you're right about that, I think. I hate to say it. You know, I'd like to reach out to the black community and open an honest dialogue about what's going on in this country, because I don't think the race baiters like Sharpton and Jackson are being fair in how they present the situation.
This has nothing to do with fairness. It never has had, Mike. Back in the
It has to do with power.
Power. Back in the Reconstruction, when the blacks first got their first turn at bat, you might say, when the Union Army occupied the South and they had the Freedmen's Bureau and they had the Republican Party machines based on black votes and they had Confederate soldiers refuse the right to vote and so forth and so on, the blacks had a term for it. They said, the bottom rail gonna be on the top. And that, in essence, is what race relations in this country has always been about, which color rail is going to be on top. The whole American issue, ever since one of Columbus's sailors plugged the first Indian with a matchlock musket, has been race. Race is the American issue. Who does this continent belong to? That refines the whole racial issue right down to the nub. You're right, it's about power, it's about ownership, it's about who owns the land and who reaps the benefits of the land.
Well, one of the things that I notice, Harold, you watch television, you watch the mainstream media outlets, whether it's TV, whether it's movies, whatever, blacks always seem angry. And no one's ever found a way to get black academic performance up to standard.
No, you can't. They don't want equality of opportunity. They want equality of results. And the only way that they can get that is through a flat-out quota system, affirmative action. Equality of opportunity, I have no trouble giving that to blacks as long as they are allowed to fail. But they're no longer allowed to fail.
That seems to be the thing. We've all heard stories where they graduate high school and in some cases graduate college and they still can't read and write.
Yeah.
And so how do we expect them to perform and succeed? If you take the premise from the book, The Bell Curve, which states that intellect is destiny,
mm-hmm.
and you look at what the IQ testing is, and if you take that premise, they're extremely handicapped when it comes to performing intellectually. They're extremely gifted when it comes to performing athletically. But there's limited opportunity for athletic performance to pay. And
you can't spend your whole life dribbling a basketball.
No, you can't. You've got a life there. You've got a career, no matter what sport it is. And so many of them are pushed into sports. But what do the rest of them do? How do they survive? They get by. You know, you look at our government now where the government's broke. You know, we're borrowing 40 cents out of every dollar.
Must pay for blacks. Now, you ask how they survive, it's very simple. They get on the white man's back and they ride in one way or another. Trouble is, the white man can't carry them anymore.
And so what happens when the Safeway store, or the Kroger's, or the IGA doesn't accept the EBT card because the government's late in paying? What happens?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's been a question that we've been talking about for 40 years. What happens on the day when the welfare checks don't come? Well, we know what happens. They riot. Now, the question is then, how does the government react to the riots, and will there be sufficient police and military and sufficient political will to suppress the riots? And this is where Obama comes in. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see what we used to call a long, hot summer this summer.
Okay, here's our break coming up, and we've got George from Wisconsin. We'll take you right after the break. George will be right there. Thank you so much for listening. Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, and it's April 3rd, 2012. And let's welcome our caller, George from Wisconsin. Good morning, George. How are you, sir?
Greetings, gentlemen. Listen, I just got a call from one of the men in my unit. He'd been down in Oklahoma for a couple of years, and he says those people down there are really in readiness. And he told me he went to the gun show in Tulsa over the weekend, and he had to park a mile away. And people are just grabbing stuff up. One counter he was at, a man walked up and he says, "Hey, man, you got some Russian ammo, blah, blah, blah." He says, "Yeah, I ain't got it on the table yet." He says, "How many you got?" He told him, you know, 1,000, 1,000. He said, "I'll take them all." and he's bringing me a hat. It says,
okay, so,
come
so,
and take it, and it got a cannon on it, so Oklahoma
so George,
is ready.
Let me ask you your question.
Yes,
let me ask
sir.
You a question. So the question I have for you is it your opinion that white America is gearing up for a long, hot summer?
Absolutely, sir. You've been in the news business probably long. I only been in 10 years, but I have studied everything. I got people in different states that send me stuff all the time. I'm just working on my April newsletter, and I think I'm going to dig out the media bypass thing that has that list about will we turn on our own citizens. This is ridiculous, but we got too many men that are not in the country, especially our National Guard. So all the foreign troops that are here, we're just going to have to be ready. And as soon as they approach, you know they're not going to come out as a friendly, and we've got to do what has to be done.
Well, the thing to fear most is that we're going to see blue helmets.
Yes, sir.
That, and you know, whenever I see my first blue helmet, that's a bad day for me, and I will never advocate violence against the government of the United States, but the blue helmets, all bets are off.
I'm with Michael New. I talked with his father. I donated to him, and I'm wondering whatever happened. All of a sudden, we don't hear anything. Are you privy to any of that? What's going on?
No, I'm not, but do you have any questions or comments for our guest, Harold Covington?
No, just keep up the good work. We got to alert the white people that we just cannot just lay back. I'm a friendly. I had a lot of black friends I grew up on, 43rd and the Dan Ryan in Chicago. Of course, it wasn't the Dan Ryan back in them days. But I had people from Chinatown, the Italian area. We were like separatists, but we were still all friends, played baseball, football together. But now it's a whole different ball game because there's race cards being turned on us, and Jesse Jackson, he is one evil dude, man.
Well, I agree. And, George, thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate it. Let me get back to Harold.
Yes, sir.
Harold,
go ahead.
Closing comments for the last 2 minutes. All right, Harold, we're running out of time here. We've got about 2 minutes left, and I want to give you the closing comments, whatever you want to communicate to our listeners. It's up to you.
Well, as I said, we're headed for a long, hot summer because Obama is desperate for reelection. We are going to see more Trayvon Martin incidents and more attempts on the part of the government and the Democrats to whip up racial hysteria, racial fear, and the immediate aim of all this is going to be to buffalo or intimidate as many people as possible into voting for Obama for reelection, of course.
Well, Harold, you know, I look at this and I look at, you know, the flash mob situation, the black on white violence. And white people have a right to defend themselves. White people don't need to live in fear. There's our closing music. We're running out of time here, Harold, but thank you so much for being a guest. Glad you could join us today.
Anytime, Mike.
Talk again soon. Everybody,
okay.
Take care. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.